I shall read from the second book of Samuel and chapter 14. So Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was concerned about Absalom. And Joab sent to Tekoa and brought from there a wise woman and said to her, "Please pretend to be a mourner. Put on mourning apparel. Do not anoint yourself with oil, but act like a woman who has been mourning a long time for the dead. Go to the king and speak to him in this manner." So Joab put the words in her mouth. The next few verses then describe the actions of this so-called wise woman from Tekoa. There is some background you need to know. David is the king of Israel at this time, and his son Absalom has fled from him. For good reason, it must be said, he's a killer. Nevertheless, there is enmity between the two. And Joab, a senior army official, has employed the services of this woman to, in one respect, be a little bit sneaky, to pretend to be a woman who is mourning, who claims that she has her own family problems, and she asks David to offer protection and to intervene. So I'm going to read from the end of verse 5. And she answered, "Indeed, I am a widow. My husband is dead. Now your maidservant had two sons, and the two fought with each other in the field, and there was no one to part them, but the one struck the other and killed him. And now the whole family has risen up against your maidservant, and they said, 'Deliver him who struck his brother, that we may execute him for the life of his brother whom he killed. And we will destroy the heir also.' So they would extinguish my ember that is left, and leave to my husband neither name nor remnant on the earth." Then the king said to the woman, "Go to your house, and I will give orders concerning you." And the woman of Tekoa said to the king, "My lord, O king, let the iniquity be on me and on my father's house, and the king and his throne be guiltless." So the king said, "Whoever says anything to you, bring him to me, and he shall not touch you any more." Then she said, "Please, let the king remember the Lord your God, and do not permit the avenger of blood to destroy any more, lest they destroy my son." And he said, "As the Lord lives, not one hair of your son shall fall to the ground." Therefore the woman said, "Please, let your maidservant speak another word to my lord the king." And he said, "Say on." So the woman said, "Why then have you schemed such a thing against the people of God? For the king speaks this thing as one who is guilty, in that the king does not bring his banished one home again." Let me pause there. This unnamed woman of Tekoa has been employed by Joab to try and reconcile father and son. We don't know her name. We know that she's called a wise woman. It might just be that she was a woman who was known for her wisdom. Or wise woman was sometimes a term for somebody in every village who was in charge of medicine. She might actually have been a kind of chemist. And she clearly has a reputation. And the first thing I'd like to say about her is that she's very, very brave to go to King David and effectively to be used to challenge him. Here is a woman, to use a phrase, who speaks truth to power. We might be accomplished at pointing out fault in people who don't have power over us, but people who do, we tend to leave them alone, be a bit more respectful. Here is a woman who does not appear to be afraid of the king. On the one hand, he is telling her, "I'll do everything I can for you to be, for your son to be reconciled and to live." But now she's effectively pointing out his hypocrisy. You're wanting my family, and she reveals later on she's made it all up. You want my family to be reconciled, my son to be saved. If that is the case, why is yours still in exile? Oh, David, have you not just heard what you have said? the most powerful man in the land. And here this woman is calling him out. She's not afraid of him. She knows that the purpose for which she has been employed is more important. She goes on to say in verse 14, "For we will surely die and become like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again." We know that she's something of an actress. Is she a drama queen as well? In verse 14, "For we will surely die and become like water spilled on the ground." I think she's speaking of the nation of Israel. To pour water on the ground is to throw it away, to waste it, to squander it. And I think she's saying here that if it's important for individual families to get on with each other, how much more the royal family, the king, and one who may potentially replace him as a king. It's important that not only Christian leaders, but actually Christian families reconcile, are well managed. Not that people just preach it about others, but actually live it themselves. Because if this rift in the royal family continues, the whole of Israel will suffer. She says something even more wonderful, though, in verse 14. At the beginning of the verse, it's effectively, "We are all in danger of this family rift." She may, of course, be referring to a civil war. But she goes on to speak about God. "Yet God does not take away a life, but he devises means so that his banished ones are not expelled from him." Who is this woman? She's not preaching to him, but she knows the gospel. But she's not a New Testament woman, but she knows the gospel. "Yet God does not take away a life." Well, in one respect, of course, we know that he does. There are plenty of occasions in the Old Testament when particular crimes or sins warrant the death penalty, or where particular armies are destroyed. But she goes on to explain. "He devises means so that his banished ones are not expelled from him." A banished one is one who is sent away, one who is cut off, one who is removed. And God does banish. He banished Lucifer from heaven. He banished Adam and Eve from Eden. In fact, as someone prayed earlier, he banishes any sinner from before him because he cannot even behold iniquity. So offensive is it to his holiness. We are cut off from God. We are not entitled to him. And yet she says, he devises means so that banished ones are not expelled from him. Well, surely a banished one is expelled from him. I think she means those who are banished need not be banished forever. He finds a way to bring people back. Not fallen angels, I hasten to add, but fallen men and women. Adam was expelled from Eden, but even in that order to leave, there is the hope of a coming deliverer, the serpent crusher. And the gospel is God's means, that which he has devised, he has thought of, he has commissioned, is a way to bring us back to him. Oh, there are plenty of man-made ways of coming back to God, but they all fail. The Tower of Babel, failure. Good works, failure. False man-made religion, failure. God himself has devised a way to bring us back. This woman is effectively sharing the gospel with David. And what she is saying, of course, and in one respect, she is a theologian. She may not have understood what she was saying as much as we understand it and apply it this evening. But if God brings people back, so ought you to. We know, of course, of David and Bathsheba. David did something wicked. He was, as it were, banished. But he appealed to God's grace and to God's mercy. The Lord brought him back. It did, of course, require a death of a firstborn. But that's how God brings Adam and his people back, by the death of the firstborn. Not the firstborn child, but the firstborn of heaven. Verse 15, now therefore I have come to speak of this thing to my lord the king, because the people have made me afraid. And your maidservant said, I will now speak to the king. It may be that the king will perform the request of his maidservant. She's now saying to him, and she's very respectful, it must be said, you have a choice to make. You may listen to me. You may not. You may be angry by what I say to you, or you may accept it. This is my message. What are you going to do? For the king will hear and deliver his maidservant from the hand of the man who will destroy me and my son together with the inheritance of God. Your maidservant said, the word of my lord the king will now be comforting, for as the angel of God, so is my lord the king in discerning good and evil. And may the Lord your God be with you. My lord the king, you have a choice to make. You can be like the gods who received you back when you rebelled against him. You can do to your son Absalom as God did to you, to call home, to forgive, to reinstate. You can discern good from evil. You know what you ought to do. There is a little more dialogue between them, but look at verse 21. All right, I have granted this thing. Go therefore, bring back the young man, Absalom. Now, again, Absalom, it must be said, is something of an ne'er-do-well. And yet there is this lovely picture here of David, not this time the adulterer and the killer, but this time the offended party. David, who has received the mercy of God, is now being asked to be merciful himself. And that is one of the miracles of grace, that we who have been forgiven much can ourselves forgive much. We who have received much can ourselves give much. And I think the reconciliation is gradual, and I think it is painful. But God chose to use an unnamed woman from Tekoa. She did admittedly have a reputation for being wise, but notice that David didn't know who she was. He didn't recognise her. He didn't say, hold on, aren't you that wise woman from Tekoa? You don't have a family, I know you perfectly well. In fact, it would seem that she keeps a low profile, although Joab is familiar with her abilities. In one respect, she does deceive him. Or is that simply a bit of drama and diplomacy? So what can we learn from her? Number one, she was available. Joab asked for her help, and she gave it. Number two, she wasn't afraid. This may have been the hardest task she's ever been commissioned to perform. It required the most wisdom, the most tact. She discharged it well. Number three, she calls out hypocrisy when she sees it. Although her aim is to reconcile a father and a son, the fact is David has been somewhat hypocritical because of the situation she presented to him. You want reconciliation in my little family, now achieve it in your own family for the sake of the whole of Israel. Which brings me on to my fourth point. She understood that when there was discord in the royal family, there was difficulty and danger for the entire nation. Now you can think what you like about our own royal family, but let me bring it a bit closer to home, shall I? When there is discord in a Christian household, there are problems in a Christian church. And hypocrisy at home will only ever create problems in a church. And the final point I'd make is that in the situation in which she's effectively addressing a father, urging him to reconcile to a son, she has shared the gospel. Has she stumbled across it? Or is she one of the old faithful in Israel who, looking forward, knew something of how God was going to effect reconciliation? On the one hand, she talks of guilt and water being spilled on the ground. But she also speaks of a God who chooses not to take away life, but to save it, to spare it, to pardon it. A God who devises a means to bring banished ones back. And shortly, when we come to pray, we will pray, I think, for Christian families, pray for any families actually, but also pray for the banished ones we know of. Perhaps those who once walked with the Lord and now they don't, or perhaps those who never have, that God would bring them home. Amen. Amen.